Over the years, there have been many attempts to describe, in mathematical terms, the reason why music is so enjoyable, why particular arrangements of notes have such a pleasing sound to the ear. But one of the problems with theories like these is often that they're rooted in a particular culture. They work well for, say, Western music, but they don't say much about music from India or China or other parts of the world. One of my colleagues, Simon Holland, has been working on a theory that tries to give a more general explanation of how musical harmony can be described mathematically. And I went to see him in his office at the Open University. Well, here I am in Simon Holland's office. Now, Simon, you've been working on a mathematical theory which describes music and harmony, and that's different from the Pythagorean theory that we've heard about earlier in the program.
Well, yes. To everyone's amazement, in 1980, it turned out that there was a way of describing what's going on in harmony and tonal music that had nothing to do with frequency ratios, integer ratios, vibrations, the length of strings. Instead, it was to do with mathematical group theory.
Now, mathematical group theory, that's the theory that essentially describes patterns, right?
Yes, but it can be misleading to focus on the idea of patterns, because if you think about atonal music and 20th century composers like Schoenberg, they used the idea of patterns and transformations of patterns, reflections, inversions, and so forth, as a way of getting away from traditional tonal music. Whereas, if you look at tonal music, the music of composers like Bach and Mozart and Handel, and indeed most rock and jazz, there, group theory can tell you what is going on at the heart of the harmony of that music.
Well, Simon, could you explain a bit how this theory that you've been applying recently differs from the Pythagorean theory that we talked about earlier in the program?
If you're trying to put together a mathematical theory of something, then one of the fundamental steps is to try and get a good coordinate system for the things you're dealing with. In this case, we're dealing with musical notes and the way that the music moves around the scale and around in different keys. But how can you have a good coordinate system for music if you're not going to use the whole system, the whole Pythagorean system of frequency ratios, of string lengths, and so forth? In 1980, Jerry Bolzano noticed that there was a completely different way of providing a coordinate system for music. And to do this, he picked up on just three facts. And the three facts are that in the musical scale, you've got exactly 12 objects. Secondly, those 12 objects have an obvious order that everyone agrees on, just ascending pitch or descending pitch. And thirdly, the fact that when you get to the top of the scale, it's like you've gone back to the beginning again. Musicians feel that in some sense the scale is circular. Right, so given the fact that you've got 12 objects with a circular ordering, then immediately any group theorist will tell you that you can apply the theory of the cyclic group of order 12. Okay, so the normal ordering that we use for dealing with musical notes is, of course, just in ascending order of pitch, like this. What group theory suggests is that rather than looking at it one-dimensionally, you should look at it as a two-dimensional pattern. Now, the two-dimensional pattern is a very simple one. On one axis, you simply take every fourth note, like so. Now, you very quickly get back to the beginning again because it's circular. So moving along that axis just keeps repeating. Now, on the other axis, you simply take every third note. And once again, you come back to the beginning. Now, when you apply the group theory, you can see all these structures that musicians seem to be interested in laid out spatially before your eyes. So the business of the irregular pattern of white notes among the black notes, in the two-dimensional representation, you can see the white notes laid out as a kind of a regular box. Another thing to be explained is that musicians have this strong intuition that there's more than one way to make a direct beeline to a note. So one way is just to move along the scale. But musicians have this strong intuition that if you go like this, You are also, in a very strong harmonic sense, making a direct beeline for a note. Now, the two ways of making a direct beeline for things harmonically turn out to be nothing other than the two orthogonal axes. In the group theory representation, the very important chords that musicians feel are the fundamental basis turn out to be nothing else other than three notes as close together as you can pack them in the space. You get one shape for major chords, one shape for minor chords. Furthermore, the major chords turn out to be arranged in a straight line with one chord in the middle, and the chord in the middle is indeed the major tonal center. Furthermore, the minor chords are arranged in a straight line, and the middle one is none other than where you find the minor tonal center. When you start looking at chord sequences in the group theory space, it turns out that the most well-known chord sequences in tonal music are none other than straight line paths towards these central or home areas, either the major or the minor. So in the group theory representation, you can not only see chord sequences moving towards their harmonic targets, when you change key, you can see the boxes representing the keys moving, and near moves are nearby keys, further away moves are more distant keys, and in complicated pieces of harmony, rather than having a stationary target, you have a moving target as the key shifts. Now, one of the interesting things about the group theory approach is that although you need a scale of 12 notes, you don't have to have the integer ratio business. A composer called Enrique Moreno at Stanford University had a very interesting idea. He wondered what would happen if he tuned a keyboard instrument so that the octave was not in a frequency ratio of 2:1, but in the frequency ratio of 3:1, and then he spread the tuning of all 12 notes evenly between that. Enrique Moreno wondered whether, first of all, he could write music where he was treating this new 3:1 octave as being a real octave. Although Enrique didn't know about the group theory when he composed his pieces and conducted his experiment, a very interesting fact is that the group theory account applies just as well to the harmony in his pieces, just as well as the group theory applies to traditional harmony, Bach, Mozart, etc. You can also take it a step further. For example, I use the group theory representation to look at the harmonic structure of a jazz standard called All the Things You Are. And one of the things that came out from looking at the visual representation is you can see it as being a harmonic chase game played with a moving target. Now, when I saw that, I realized that the same basic trick could be used not only with tonal materials, but with modal materials. Now, that's not to say that the group theory automatically composed for me a new piece of music, but it did give me an insight on a strong structural backbone that could be used in more than one way. So I was able to compose a new piece of music, but that's based on exactly the same harmonic trick.
Well, that's very interesting, because that shows that this mathematical approach using group theory to music not only gives you new insights into conventional music and perhaps more modern forms of composition, but it actually allows us to expand our musical horizons and even perhaps to transcribe new pieces from old, as you have done with All the Things You Are. So let's hear All the Things You Are in the original version and in your new version.